County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is none other than Director of Cricket at Rugby School and former captain of the mighty Warwickshire County Cricket Club, Michael Powell. So Michael, first things first, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, pretty good so far. A couple of meetings. I'm also a housemaster at the school at the moment, so I was in a HM's meeting this morning, and then it's a full sports day today. So I've just been involved in that this morning. Then the school go out and play, up to 50-odd, 60 fixtures this afternoon across all sports. So pretty busy day, but we're on half term from tomorrow. So looking forward to that.
I can imagine you are. That sounds incredibly busy. And you mentioned all sports. What are the actual sports? I'm guessing rugby's involved, considering it is rugby school.
Actually, this term, the boys play hockey this term. The girls are on netball. But then we've got, all the other sports. So, squash, fives, badminton. Rugby do sevens this term. I'm not sure I don't think they've got fixtures this afternoon. But all the sports, swimming, you name it, everything that's going on that possibly could go on. Will be, engaging many. I think on Saturday, there were nearly 600 of the 830 boys and girls at the school, 850, sorry, boys and girls at the school that were involved in fixtures. So it's a pretty full on, it's great. It's an amazing environment for them to go and compete at whatever level, which is good.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It really does. Obviously, at the moment, though, no cricket. Unfortunately, it's not quite cricket season just yet, but a couple of months' time, county season, it's on its way, 2022, I'm looking forward to it already. Fingers crossed the Bears, of course, can retain our title as well in the county championship.
It's not an easy thing to do, that is it, but I think they're well set with a great squad, and obviously exciting times for them starting the season as champions, and some good talent coming through, as well as obviously some great experience to continue the great form they had at the end of last year.
Absolutely, Michael. And talking of that talent, we'll touch upon that in more depth as today's podcast goes on. But to kickstart today's podcast, I wanted to start right at the origin, Michael, of your cricketing journey. Because, as you know, every good story starts with an origin. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this incredible game?
So I was actually born in Bolton up in Lancashire, and I was really fortunate at the primary school I was at, the headmaster at the time. Mr. Sutcliffe was a sort of Lancashire League cricketer, played for Horwich RMI, just where we lived. And so that were, he took, every Friday after school, he'd just run a cricket session. It was just basically a game, anyone that wanted to stay there. And then my father, not really a player himself, as a youngster, he played a little bit at school and that, but not so much beyond that. But he was just passionate about the game, absolutely passionate about it. So it was sort of instilled in me quite early that, cricket was something that, my family and obviously, headmaster at school wanted me to get involved in. And so that's sort of the absolute origin where my first memories probably as a 5-6-year-old. And then it was actually in 1984, my dad took me to Lourdes to watch the England West Indies test match. I think it was the fourth day we went, but there was bad light stop play. Sort of 3 o'clock, and we didn't plan on staying any longer, but he knew how sort of passionate I was about it and gutted that we hadn't seen, Botham and Lamb and Gooch and Gow and all these guys. And so we booked into some dodgy cheap B&B somewhere close to the ground, and we went and watched the fifth day. And of course, that was the infamous day where I think Gow was captain. Gow declared sort of half an hour into the last day. And then I had the pleasure of watching Greenwich and Haynes smash it to absolute all parts with Larry Gomes as well. And I think Gordon Greenwich got 220-something not out, chasing 300-odd on the last day, which, you know, obviously seems normal these days, but in 1984, you know, chasing 300 in one day was something quite spectacular, or less than a day. So that was, I remember sitting there with my dad just thinking, wow, I want to be out there. I just plead anything, whatever I've got to do, I want to be out there. Obviously, it would have been lovely to do it in an England shirt, but, you know, nothing more proud than walking out at Lord's, you know, with the Bears. So, yeah, so that's really where the sort of the catalyst and that sort of ignition that you know, ignited me into wanting to pursue a career in cricket.
Well, it's a lovely journey into the game. I must admit that. What an occasion that is at Lord's, watching Greenwich and Haynes, two absolute masters of the craft of batting, legends in their own right, especially in the West Indies. Absolutely superb talents. And actually, talking of those, and you mentioned all those massive names, I mean, both them, Gower, Lamb as well for England. Who in those formative years did you try to almost emulate in your cricket per se? Did you have any idols, any icons, influences in the professional game, either in county cricket or international cricket beyond that, that you tried to model your game off of per se?
I think, okay, so starting off, anyone that watched me back will know that I didn't model myself on how he played. But Botham was obviously a huge figure in the game at the time. And I just loved the fact that no matter what the situation, he believed, you know, even if they only wanted one to win off 100 balls and there was 9 wickets left, you know, Ian Botham played the game as if he could take on 9 wickets and we could still win the game. So I think that style, you know, that sort of passion and that belief in what you could achieve, you know, was, I think Botham was, you know, the ultimate for me in that. But then from a batting perspective, you know, my dad idolised Jeff Boycott as an opener, even though he was born in Lancashire, but he idolised, but he liked, you know, someone just saying, I'm going out to bat and I'm going to bat all day. I don't care how boring I am or how long it takes, but my job is to bat all day. And so, you know, I think that was instilled into me early on. And I really admired Graham Gooch. I think Graham Gooch took the game to a different level at that time, you know, in terms of how he trained, how he prepared. You know, he was obviously slightly more attacking than Sir Geoffrey, but, you know, I really admired him as a player. And then, and later on, actually looking back, it was, you know, although he played slightly before my time in that, you know, my second chief executive at Warwickshire, Dennis Amos, you know, I had the pleasure as a youngster, you know, Dennis was obviously close with our coaches at the time. And he would often come in and chat to us about batting. So sort of growing up, those influences, I think, probably shaped the way I ended up blocking and leaving it for 15 years.
I was about to say, yeah, Boycott, not known for his strike rate, shall we say.
No. But I don't know. I took as much pleasure, you know, if I could bat for 150, 200 deliveries, even if I've only got 50, 60 runs. But then, you know, as we've seen this winter, you know, you want your best batters batting for the final 35, 40 overs of the older ball before the new ball is taken with batters in. And that's what an opener's job is. Your opener's job is to see off the new ball, you know, and get yourself in. You know, obviously, as we know in modern day cricket, in all cricket, if you can be scoring runs, you know, reasonably quickly at the same time, then you're not just, you know, seeing off the new ball. You're actually dictating play and gaining the momentum. So it's that fine line between, you know, what do you do first? What's most important? You know, getting bowlers into third spells, you know, third spells in the day where you are completely in and in control. I think that's where I was fortunate to look at, you know, some of the best batters that did that, you know, and obviously play with some of the best bowlers that didn't allow that to happen. So that's the beauty of Test cricket, which is what, you know, I grew up on in that respect. So, you know, I had some great mentors, you know, and some great sort of heroes to look up to. But those are the two growing up, you know, Botham and Gooch, for obviously very, very different batting reasons and that.
Absolutely. And I love that little passage about Test cricket, because it is the pinnacle of the game. As soon as you understand Test cricket, it's the best sport on the planet, because it does exactly what it says on the tin. It's a test, both physically, mentally, psychologically. It is the pinnacle of sport. And again, I am very, very biased in that opinion. I understand that as the the host of the County Cricket Podcast, but a good test match just cannot be beaten. As we saw in 2019, for example, with Ben Stokes, as we saw in 2005 with the Edgbaston test, and to be honest, lots of tests in the iconic Ashes series. You just cannot beat a good test match. And it's interesting there you mentioned Dennis Amiss, because this is actually a nice place to pick up our conversation about Warwickshire County Cricket Club. Because for those who know Dennis, absolute titan here in the West Midlands, our all-time leading first-class run scorer, over 36,000 first-class runs for Warwickshire County Cricket Club. That is insane. Absolutely ridiculous figures for Dennis. But you mentioned beforehand, Michael, that you were born in Lancashire. So how did that move down to Shakespeare's County actually materialise in the first place? How did that move come about, per se?
Yeah, it was literally my dad's job move to the head office was actually in Rugby Railway Terrace, about a stone's throw away from where I'm sitting now. And so they moved my dad down there, offered him the position down here. So we moved in 1988. End of January 1988. So I was still 12, turning 13 that April. And I just joined the school just around the corner from me here at Rugby Lawrence Sheriff School, and started there. And my coach from up in Horwich near Bolton, I played for a club called British Aerospace, and Dave Fairbrother, who's really instrumental in sort of my sort of first formative years, you know, from sort of 6 to 11 years old. He just, you know, voluntarily led net sessions for myself and some friends of mine down at the club. And he wrote to Warwickshire and said, look, you know, you've got this young boy, Michael Powell, joining your area. He's coming to your county. I was just about to send him for Lancashire trials. You know, it would be worth having a look at him. And so that's how the link sort of happened. You know, he hand wrote a letter, you know, to Neil Abley at Warwickshire. And so I got invited in, even before I'd started school officially, just got invited in down to Edgbaston to come and get involved. And so sort of got into the programme at under 13s and then stayed in the programme from then on in. So, you just never know. Had we not moved, would I have been successful at Lancashire? Who knows? You just don't know. But a few things fell into place.
They most certainly did. And obviously, I'm going to be incredibly biased here, Michael, but I think you made the right choice, to be honest, coming down to Edgbaston as a Bears fan. Yeah. But in terms of... Absolutely. Of Warwickshire as a club, what were your first impressions? Because as we all know, Warwickshire are a massive club here in England and Wales. You can just see the names, right, who have played for the Bears over the years. You look at the trophies. We've won 22 trophies over the years, 12 one-day cups, 8 county championships, 1 T20 Blast, 1 Bob Willis trophy. That's a lot of trophies. That's a lot of silverware. So not much room in the trophy cabinet left at Edgbaston. What were your first impressions of Warwickshire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, I think when I first came in, obviously the ground now as it is, it was very different. You know, driving in there, the old through the gates with the number one net area on your left and the old indoor school on the right. And that's what my first memory was. It was, you know, I played a bit in the summer, but you obviously weren't based at Edgbaston as an under 13, you know, Warwickshire Schools Cricket Association player. But then in the winters, you know, my parents and the two other lads, Greg Pearson and Darren Altry, who went on and joined the Bears along with me a similar time for a few years. And so we used to, you know, our parents, the three sets of parents, used to share lifts, bringing us across to Edgbaston, which is no mean feat, as I understand, along the M6, getting in there, you know, on a Friday evening after school and things like that. So it was just those, you know, the three lanes in the indoor school, Neil Abley in one, Steve Rousen another, and then it was originally Alan Townsend in the third one, and then Steve Perryman joined in, you know, and that was the journey. So, and obviously, you know, that you could tell from the quality of the players there and the older ones, you know, that I always felt Warwickshire were very good at, you know, if you were good enough to play up, they would play you up and give you the best challenge possible. And then, you know, obviously at that time, you know, that's late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, looking at the figureheads, your Bob Willises of the world that were, you know, finished, Andy Lloyd as captain. And then obviously those, you know, the bowling era of, you know, Donald Small, Munton that was coming to the fore. You know, your Paul Smiths. And then obviously as I started, Andy Moles, who played a huge part in the start of my career. So I think you recognise the magnitude of the club. You know, obviously a test match ground that has that hive of activity and that buzz around it, you know, every year, either in a test match or these days in a one day or the T20 finals day or, you know, a World Cup, you know that if you're in and around Edgbaston, you are going to see the best of the best. And obviously there's a lot of counties that, you know, are fantastic counties, produce some superb players. But as a youngster, you know, growing up, you don't get that same, you know, the international players playing there. And I suppose, you know, coming from Lancashire, joining Warwickshire, you know, that's two powerhouses of, you know, on the county circuit for you and have been for years and years. So you just got that sense of, right, you know, the stalwarts at Warwickshire, you know, you can list names and names. Like you say, Dennis Amos. I mean, you know, I'd have had to play till I'm 83 to score that many runs, you know, and he did it. You know, I know it was a lot of 3-day cricket, you know, get in the car, play the next game, batting on uncovered wickets. I mean, you just look at the figures and you just can't take that away from someone like that. The guy's got 100 first-class hundreds. You know, he played for England for all those years. He scored 30-odd, 40,000 first-class runs. I mean, that is, you know, if you say 1,000 runs in a season was a milestone, then, well, that's great. You've got to play for between 35 and 40 years to achieve that. So it just shows what, you know, I know there were a lot more innings then, but, you know, because you had a lot more 3-day matches, but it's still, you know, the magnitude of that is massive. And, you know, once you've stood at the other end to Brian Lara and you know that he's a bear and he scored those runs that he did, although I didn't, you know, bat with him in 94, but in 98 when he came back and captained, as you think, well, I've basically stood out in the middle with arguably one of the best batters that's ever lived. You know, he's in that bracket with his record. So I think Warwickshire just, it is a huge county. It's a massive county. It's got a great history. And, you know, I'm proud to be part of that history, albeit an incredibly small part. But, you know, when you associate yourself with those people you've mentioned, it's, you know, why wouldn't you be inspired as a youngster? And I think that's what I always passed on to others around me. You know, I was fortunate to, you know, cap Ian Bell as a youngster, Jim Trout and Jonathan Trott lived with myself and Michelle, my wife, when he first moved across. You know, and you could just see these guys, you know, they both went on and played over 140, 50 odd times for England. Now, these are phenomenal cricketers. So, you know, I'm still ignited by, you know, I'm excited, obviously, for Jacob now coming through, seeing Sam doing what he's done. You know, I just think the list is endless. There's some amazing, amazing cricketers connected with Warwickshire, as there are with many other counties.
Absolutely. And yeah, 2022, that's going to be interesting. It really is. Lots of teams have got incredibly strong squads. It's going to be a fascinating summer. So again, just from here, us here at the County Cricket Podcast, go down, support your counties. That's all I'll say. Plenty of talent on display. It's going to be a fantastic season and definitely a summer to remember, in my personal opinion. But Michael, just listing off those names, it is incredible. I imagine you've made quite a lot of fans quite envious there, you know, going out and batting with the Prince himself, Brian Charles Lara, the seventh all-time leading test run scorer, a guy who in 1994 came to Warwickshire and just cemented a legendary status, didn't he? Over 2,000 runs with an average of 89. Brian Lara, an absolute titan here in the West Midlands, someone who I wish I was old enough to have watched. Honestly, if I could go back to any time frame in Warwickshire's cricketing history, it would be 94, obviously, for the treble and to watch Brian Lara. But the fact that you got to bat alongside him, that is absolutely incredible. And then all of those names in the 90s, Warwickshire really were a tour de force, as were Leicestershire, to be fair. Leicestershire started to build momentum towards the end of the decade, as did Glamorgan and Surrey, of course, going into the early 2000s. But Warwickshire absolutely dominated at times in the 1990s. And it was in the mid to late 90s that you made your Warwickshire first team debut, Michael. So what do you remember about that occasion? Just how special was that to you, considering you'd made the move to Warwickshire as a kid, you'd gone through the age group system, you'd done schools cricket in the area. How special was that occasion to walk out onto that field and represent the Bear and Ragged staff for the first time?
I look, it's, you know, I suppose it's one of those days you'll never forget. You know, in that era, I remember, obviously, 94 was my first year on the playing staff. And I think I made my debut in 96, I think it was, against Durham at Edgbaston. So it was a home match, which obviously is extra special. And, Now, I was actually in a rich vein of form in the seconds, and you had to be. The quality of the staff was, obviously the staffs were very big at that time. So yeah, against Durham, and I opened the batting with Andy Moles. I think, you know, a few things had fallen into place. You know, people like Wasim Khan had moved on, and, you know, there were some fantastic players, you know, playing in the second team. And I think I'd basically got four back-to-back. So I think I got one double 100 and 300 in the seconds. So, you know, just to earn the right to get. I mean, that's how strong the, you know, the actual playing squad was and the first team was. And I just didn't see myself in that bracket of player. There were some amazing players there. And yeah, I opened the batting against Durham. John Wood and Simon Brown, I think, were the two opening bowlers. So left arm over Simon, I think it was Simon Brown. And Andy Miles at the other end. So John Wood bowled the first. Now, I remember hitting, I think my first ball I hit for two. I must have whipped it off stump through sort of mid-wicket. And then the third or fourth ball I whipped for four. And at the end of the over, I was obviously six not out. We were six not out. My heart was racing. I don't even remember seeing the ball. It was just like, I just felt like the ground was, you know, rising. I was just stood in like the Coliseum or somewhere about to be thrown to the lions. And Andy Moles came down to me at the end of the over, and he just looked at me smiling and said, because there was obviously 104 overs in the day and I was six not out. And he said, "You okay?" I said, yeah, I'm a bit, wow, this is amazing. He said, "Well, keep batting like that, young man. You'll be 624 not out at the end of the day," you know? And it just completely, it made me laugh and smile, and just, it just calmed me down completely. And he knew what I'd been through, you know, just to get to this point, because he knew how tough it was. And he also knew that, you know, I'm at that stage of my career starting off, and he was in the twilight of his career, having had a few injury problems. And, you know, there were some people back in those days that wouldn't have taken too kindly to someone scoring all those runs in the seconds and trying to take their spot in the first. So he was just someone, he was a great mentor for me, and someone I looked up to greatly, and always respect him for, you know, calming me down in that moment. So, yeah, I think I managed 26 and 32 in my two innings and felt great, because I was generally in a great, you know, rich vein of form. And, you know, I would have loved to, one of those innings to have gone on and got at least a 50 or obviously 100. But, like, it was just a special occasion to be involved in, you know, playing with the best players in the county at that time. So it was lovely.
I can imagine it was. And, yes, spot on as well. Good recall that, to be honest, Michael. 26 and 51 balls. Do you know who dismissed you in that first innings?
I know Simon Brown got me out in one of the innings, if not both. I played on in one of them, I think.
Yeah, he did get you out in both. Yeah, you're right.
Both innings, that's right. It was left arm over, yeah.
Yeah, and in that second innings, you got 32 from 99 balls.
So, oh, there we go. That's quite quick strike rate for me. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. I'm just looking at the scorecard, to be honest, from that game. I'm just looking at some of the names. Obviously, Andy Moles, Dominic Osler, Trevor Penny, yeah. Sean Pollock, Dougie Brown, Ashley Giles, Neil Smith, Tim Munson. What a side that is to make your debut in.
And that's, you know, that's the thing. I was, 21 years old. And it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, just to learn off those people, the, you know, like, you'd reel off that batting lineup. You know, I've batted a lot with Dominic, you know, throughout my career. And, you know, Trevor, we know what Trevor could do. He was an amazing cricketer. I think what one thing we were always blessed with were fantastic all-rounders. So obviously Sean Pollock, you know, one of the world's best at the time, amazing cricketer, lovely, lovely man, very humble man, super, you know, would have got into most sides as a bowler or as a batter. And then, you know, around that, you know, Dougie and Ashley and Neil Smith, these guys could win you the game with the bat and the ball. And I think that's what made Warwickshire so strong, you know, was probably, you know, in my dad's era, he always told me about, you know, if you got England five down, they were all out quite quickly. Whereas you looked at that side and you thought, well, I remember games where Ashley and Dougie would go out and put on a 150 partnership, you know, when we were 140 for six, you know, and you're thinking, sure, if we get up to 200, we'll be doing well. Then suddenly we're 320 for seven and you're actually looking at, we could get 400 here. And I think, you know, that was the strength of that, those sides I played in and obviously watched, was that, yes, there were some phenomenal players at the top, but we had so many players that scored a lot of valuable runs, you know, lower down. So, but no, and lovely people, great people. You know, still, we have our little WhatsApp group that quite a lot of those guys are still involved in, you know, supporting the current side. It's special times, really special times.
Well, to be honest, I'm glad to know that there's still that love, that connection from our former players to our current squad as well. And obviously the current squad did us all very proud last year, doing the first class double. Not a bad thing to achieve at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah. And talking of things that are quite brilliant, actually, Michael, and I suppose incredibly prestigious, because we mentioned all of these extraordinary names, these absolute titans of Warwickshire County Cricket Club. Just 5 years later, you were captaining the club, you know, your boyhood club, the club that you'd spent so long going through that age group system with. You'd made your debut in 1996, played alongside some of these massive players. And in 2001, you got the opportunity to skipper the Bare and Ragged staff. So before we get into the trials and tribulations of captaincy and obviously what was going on at the club during the time, when did you find out and how did you find out that you were going to captain this mighty club?
it's quite a funny story, I think. I was sat at home in rugby at the time. I still lived in rugby. And Bob Wilmer was coach at the time in 2000. So at the end of the 2000 season, I'd had a really good season sort of with a bat personally. And Neil Smith was captain. And the plan, so I believed, was that because there was at that period of time, the four-day side and the one-day side was that, you know, Neil was a fantastic cricketer, you know, as I say, scored us a lot of valuable runs, you know, really good off-spin bowler. But there was times because Ashley was around then that there was always this contention between, you know, should we play four seamers and one spinner or three seamers and two spinners? And so there were times when obviously Neil as captain was in the side, and I can sympathise with this, because this happened to me many times. And you're looking at thinking, actually, if I'm picking my best 11 for this surface, then I'm only picking one spinner, in which case, who's it going to be? Well, Neil was captain and it's always going to be Neil. And so it should be, because he's the captain of the club. So towards the end of that season, Bob and Neil, you know, chatted to me and said, look, we're looking at the future. You've captained every age group, England under 18s, blah, blah, blah. We'd like to sort of, you know, blood you and give you that opportunity to get some experience captaining. So they sort of put in place a proposal that I would be named vice captain if Neil then didn't play in, you know, some of the championship matches, where he would probably captain most of the one-day sides. I mean, he opened the batting for us in a few of the one-day stuff. So, but in some of the championship matches, when Ashley was with us and available and firing, that either I would continue to be vice captain and they'd use an Ashley Giles, a Nick Knight, whoever came back from England and captain, or that I would take over in a few of the championship matches. So, you know, out of 16 championship matches, if I end up taking over in 3, 4, 5 of them, then that's great experience. So that was the plan. And then I don't know what happened, but there was a committee meeting and, you know, who knows? I don't know. I wasn't in the room, obviously. I was sat at home. And I just got a phone call from Andy Lloyd, in fact, from Bob Wilmer first, saying, right, Michael, are you sitting down? I said, yeah, right, how's things? And I generally thought, oh, my goodness, they've just had the committee meeting. They've changed the plan. I'm not, you know, they're not going to go with it, or they're going to sack me or anything. I don't know. It was that horrible time at the end of September when you're on a six-month contract. And Bob just said, change of plan. You're going to get a phone call from Andy Lloyd. Listen to what he's got to say, and then have a quick think about it. And off he goes. I was like, this is really weird. What's going on? And then, so I put the phone down, and then Andy Lloyd rang me about 3 minutes later. And he didn't ask me, because Andy was quite like that. I always got on well with Andy. I like Andy. And he said, right, Michael, congratulations. You're going to be captain of the Warwickshire County Cricket Club next year. We've decided it's time to move on, and you know Neil will continue, you know, being the fantastic player he is, but we're going to move forward and you're going to be captain of the club. Okay, how do you feel about that? I was like, oh my goodness me. So I didn't, you know, obviously it's a huge honour. You know, if you were writing your own script, I'd have probably enjoyed being vice captain for that year. We were in Div 2 of the championship, I think I remember correctly, but had some, you know, fantastic figures. But it was just that transitional period again. So, yeah, so that's sort of how it happened. So it wasn't, I don't think it was plan A, but I think I was plan B or C. And, you know, that, look, you know, I was never going to turn it down, no matter what. You know, I think that sort of offer for someone of my caliber of player probably only comes around once in your career. So I was always going to take that on. And look, it was a huge honour. I was fortunate. I had some great support. And obviously Bob was with me for the first couple of years. And, you know, so I'm proud of what we achieved. We got promoted. We obviously 2002, we had a fantastic year, came second in the championship to a, you know, all international 11 of Surrey, who dominated it completely. So we, you know, we were the next best thing. You don't get any prizes for coming second, although there was a bit of prize money from memory. I think we came third in the National League at the time. And obviously we, you know, thanks to Sean Pollock and some phenomenal performances from, you know, from the all-rounders I talked about, that we managed to win the Benson Edges Cup. So, and then the third year, I performed really poorly individually as a player, and it just wasn't right for me to continue. So, you know, the club were going to make the change. And so I agreed quite rightly, I need to focus on just trying to be, you know, focus on my own game. So, but you know, 3 years I'll never forget. I captained Waka Yunis, Sean Pollock. You know, I mean, he's, you know, captaining Waka Yunis was something I'll never forget in my life. Just thinking, thank goodness he wasn't bowling at me. So, yeah, look, amazing times. So, yeah, great fun.
I can imagine it was. And before we get on to 2003 and 2004, obviously 2004. Lifting the county championship, Warwickshire's sixth at the time that was. We have to talk a little bit about the 2002 Benson and Hedges Cup, because that was the last ever edition of that tournament, a tournament which Warwickshire had had success in the past in. For example, 1994, it's part of our treble. What can you remember from that final at Lord's against Essex? Because I seem to recall, having seen the scorecard in years since, I seem to remember that Ian Bell, I think he was like 20 or 21 years old at the time, was absolutely unbelievable on that day, along with Sean Pollock.
Yeah, so, I mean, the pair that actually, you know, if you look down the list, there was Nick Knight, myself, opened the batting. Obviously, Nick Knight, you know, England legend, 100 times, one day, international caps. But Nick always said that, you know, he'd got a poor record in Lord's finals, and he really wanted to, you know, obviously he wanted to win the match for the team, but he wanted to score some runs in the Lord's final because he'd not done it. I don't know whether he'd been in one with Essex before. I couldn't remember. But he, yeah, and both he and I think I got 11 or something, or 9, 10, 11, 13, something like that. And Nick probably got, I think, you know, in the teens as well. I mean, we were only chasing, I can't remember, 180-odd, 190-odd, something like that. But suddenly we were like, you know, 30 for three or 20 odd for three or something. And it's one of those, you know, in a final, you just never know. Even though the pitch, it was definitely, you know, it wasn't quite like the NatWest at the end of the season, where if you lost the toss, then you'd have to perform a mighty miracle to win the game. You know, it was a pretty even contest. And then, yeah, a young Ian Bell, and it was Jim Troughton as well. So Bell and Troughton, you know, both. You know, youngsters in terms of the team and the age of the team. Belly, you know, was just oozed class every time we saw him bat. He was, you know, as it proved, you don't play that many times for England's test team without having a bit about you. Belly was just pure class. But actually, Jim played the role that, you know, it took the momentum away from them. I think he smashed, I think he hit three or four fours in one over, and he smashed a quick fire 30 or 40, I think it was. And that just took the sting out of, you know, Essex's few wickets. They'd gained a bit of momentum. And then Belly just looked like, you know, this is where he's meant to be. You know, you watched him back there whilst you're biting your fingernails thinking, please, 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 I just want to win this. Probably not going to get a chance as captain ever to come back to Lords. So, you know, Belly just looked, I mean, from ball one, you just looked at him and thought, wow, you belong here. I remember it was actually Ian Botham, you know, one of my childhood heroes on commentary. And I listened to it back again when we watched the highlights. of him just saying, I think, I can't remember the exact words, but he just said, this boy does not need to stay in county cricket. He just needs to be catapulted up. Just get him in the test team now, you know, because this boy has got that class. And I think that's, I always remember that. And I suppose that's, you know, looking at Sam, looking at Jacob, those people that have, you know, obviously helped get towards, you know, towards Edgbaston and the Bears. Is some people, you know, some people just, you don't want them to be playing 3, 4, 5 years of county cricket. And that's nothing against county cricket. That is just, look, these guys, are their ceiling is way up there. You know, someone like me, if I'd have had one cap for England, that would have been probably one too many. But, you know, it was close-ish if I'd have scored enough runs on an eight or, but that didn't happen. But some people, they don't need to earn their stripes in county cricket. Some people are that good. You know, Michael Vaughan, Marcus Truscothick, they got picked for England when their county records weren't necessarily, you know, superb. So you didn't want people like that with that ability to stay at that level in that system for too long. You know, you want them to go on and face the best in the world, the quickest in the world, you know, the biggest names. And some people are just born to, you know, survive at that level and dominate at that level. And I think Ian became someone that, you know, you just looked at and thought, wow, you know, I'm honoured that you live near me, and, you know, you arrived in Rugby Cricket Club Nets as a six-year-old when I was about 13, 14 or something. And you just looked a class player from then. So yeah, I mean, it's, he stole the show there, and quite rightly so. But it helps when, I think Nessa Hussain was averaging about 120 in the previous rounds. You know, scored a couple of hundreds, won the semi-final, the quarter-final, or some group games when they needed to. And of course, you know, I think Sean nicked him off. Pipes caught him second ball or third ball. And that just sent us, you know, once you knew that, I think the numbers 5, 6, 7, 8 hadn't batted for Essex in the last couple of games because they'd won, you know, quite convincingly or something like that. So yeah, when you've got players that can perform on that stage, you know, when you watch Sean Pollock there, you see why he's the test cricketer he was. When you watch Ian Bell out there, you see why he's the test cricketer he became. And then the rest of us, you just like, yeah, it's just a privilege to be out there.
Well, you say that. I mean, it's an incredible achievement. It really is. And also the last ever one. So that's a permanent fixture in the Warwickshire Trophy cabinet.
Yeah, I did ask them if we could just keep it now forever, but I don't even know where the cup is. I think the actual original one, it's probably at Lord's somewhere. But yeah, no, look, it was special. It was a great tournament. We enjoyed that. You know, a few rounds locally, sort of regional-based rounds. Then obviously once you get into the knockout stages, it's like the FA Cup is in football. That's, you know, you want that. You know, you go there on the day and anyone can beat anyone. You know, it's on the day. If it's Surrey versus, you know, Warwickshire, you think, well, we're probably, you know, on paper, probably second favourites. But anything can happen. Anyone can beat anyone in a knockout competition. You know, and I remember the semi-final more than the final, to be honest, because it was against Lancashire. So it was back in Lancashire at Old Trafford. And it was the infamous last ball where I think we needed three to win it. I think Flintoff had run out Dougie Brown from the boundary. So it left one ball left going for third, and Neil Carter strode in to face Glenn Chappell for the final ball. And he basically needed to hit a four because there was not a cat in hell's chance that Neil Carter was running a three. So, yeah, and he got down on one knee and swept him over Peter Martin's head for four. And it was just like, wow, unbelievable. We're actually, you know, you don't want to lose in the semi-final. I mean, you don't want to lose in the final, but you want to get to the final because that's the day out. That's the, you know, the massive occasion. You want your family and friends to be able to come and enjoy. So really special times, really special times.
Most certainly were. 2002, what a season for Warwickshire County Cricket Club. And then basically two seasons afterwards, we look forward to 2004. Now, 2004, an immensely special year for Warwickshire County Cricket Club, lifting the immortal prize, the one that everybody wants, the County Championship, Division One, an outstanding season for the Bear and Ragged staff. Michael, in terms of that season, what do you think made that side just so special? Considering that we'd had these titanic squads in the 1990s, What do you think made that 2004 unit so special in what was an incredibly competitive county circuit at that time?
We had some good players. We knew that, but then sometimes teams have good players and they don't necessarily gel together. Nick Knight took over as captain from me that year. I think he brought just that, you know, we had some very good individual players, but to gel them as a team was always going to be a challenge. And I think you've got to get the motivation of the players right within the squad. And sometimes you can't fix that if it's not there. But it had the right mix because you had, you know, I remember Mark, you know, your Mark War, who's a wonderful, wonderful opening batsman. You had obviously Knighty himself, who was now available and playing a lot and captaining the side. You know, Ian Bell played, I can't remember how many, but played quite a few. I remember when I was out of the side, obviously, at the start, I had to fight my way back in. And I remember us beating Surrey at Guildford. You know, and I managed to get a few, and Belly got both he and I put on quite a lot. You know, so you had Ian Bell, you had Nick Knight. So, and runs were not a problem. We scored loads of runs. There were some good pitches that year, and I don't think we lost a game. I think we only won 5 out of the 16 games, but we drew the other 11. So we were a difficult side to beat because we didn't get bowled out in the first inning. So, you know, we got, or if we did, we'd scored 400, 450. And as, you know, as England have found out in Australia, if you don't do that, it's, the game's tough. You know, you need bowlers to take you 20 wickets to win a match. That's fundamental. But you're not going to win many. Not going to win many if you're only scoring, you know, 350 runs over the course of 2 innings. And I think we had a lot of players that were striving for England's success to gain, you know, to get up there, your Troutons, your Bells. And then, you know, obviously, when I came back into the side, I was motivated to prove that I could still actually, you know, having been captain before, I could still, you know, I still belonged in an environment like that. So the motivation of players was huge. You had Nick as captain, who wanted success, and he was, you know, he led by example. He led by his own performance. He led by, you know, just do the simple things and do them well. And then, you know, so you had those players, you know, your Dominics, myself. You'd probably have to list them. I can't actually remember. He was in, you know, Tony Frost, keeping wise, coming back in. He scored a lot of runs for us, you know. Did Trotty play then?
Trotty, yes, he played. Did. Trotty did.
No, you've got Bell, Trot, Knight. Well, those 3 England, you know, superstars. You're not going to go too far wrong if the players around are filling in and dovetailing in well, and if they're motivated to, you know, their own personal gain, their own personal motivation will help the team if it's, you know, if they're striving to perform. And I think we just put runs on the board. So we became a side that you could only draw against at best. So no one hardly, you know, looked like beating us that year. It was just, could we take enough wickets, you know, to get over the line winning matches. And yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting because obviously the year, when we came second to Surrey, you know, the Surrey side 2002 to 2004, I think had changed quite a bit. It was a fair bit of transition. Whereas the 2002 side was a pretty settled Surrey side with some, you know, fantastic players. All had international recognition at some point. Whereas by 2004, a few had moved on and it had changed slightly. So their dynamic wasn't as strong as what it was in 2002. Hence what allowed, you know, a side that only won 5, I think it was 5 matches, I may be wrong, but a side that only won 5 matches, there's not many sides will win 5 matches and win the county championship. And I don't know the exact stats, but it's not often that would happen. You'd expect the team winning the championship to win at least half of their games, if not probably 10, 11 of the 16. So it was just that anomaly that year. There were some really flat pitches, some really good pitches, so it was difficult to bowl sides out. And it just gelled. Nick led us superbly. And we just had the right blend of, you know, phenomenal quality in Bell and Trotty. And then, you know, the rest of us that were just filling in where needed. So, and led brilliantly by, you know, the legend that was John Inverity, you know, whose style was very, very different to many others. But, you know, wonderful man.
Well, I'm just looking at the stats, to be honest, from that season. Ian Bell, top scoring with 1,498 runs. He had Nick Knight scoring 1,256, Jonathan Trott 1,126, Dougie Brown 911, Mark Waugh 928, and then yourself, Michael, 630. I mean, that's ridiculous. That was in 9 matches as well, might I add, at 48.46.
Yeah, so actually that, I mean, that, you know, it was a tough year for me, I'll be honest, but...
Why was that?
I was motivated. Well, you know, I've been sort of, you know, stepped down as captain. That had finished. You know, it was my dream to captain the county, to captain Warwickshire. And so that ended at the age of 28. So, you know, I was 28 when, was it 28? 2003. So, yeah, so, I was 28 years old. Now, and, you know, personally and selfishly, that's when I should have been taking over the captaincy, not when it should have been coming to an end. And yeah, you could see that Ian Bell is going to go on and play Test cricket. What a player! You know, he's already started playing. I think I can't remember when his debut was exactly. Was it 2002, 2003? So we had him, who was at the start of his England career. We had Jonathan Trott, who'd just come over, who was a fantastic player, and we knew straight away was going to have that. You've got Nick Knight, who's at the other end of his career from a Test match point of view, but was still a one-day, you know, cricketing, you know, England superstar in that respect. So you had, and you know, you've reeled off the runs there. And as I say, you had Dougie Brown. Dougie Brown won you matches with the ball and with just getting in the, you know, the batter's ear and his competitive nature with the ball and in the field. You know, he was Braveheart, literally, from coming down from Scotland. You know, and then I was motivated to prove that I still, you know, deserved a place in that side. So my record that year was, average-wise, was better than it was probably in any other year. And I wanted to be around because it was a great group. Why wouldn't you want to bat at five when you've got Ian Bell, Jonathan Trott, Dougie Brown, you know, Dominic Oster coming back occasionally and those players around? Why wouldn't you want to be involved in that? So, you know, I had to wait. And I remember scoring 100 with Trotty at Beckenham against Kent, against Mohammed Sami. And Trotty scored a delightful 100 that, you know, looked like a Test match player. And I looked like I was going to get hit on the head every other ball, but managed to survive. Got a barrel load of abuse off Andrew Symonds for looking like I did. Some average Joe. Why? What am I doing wearing that? But I managed to get 100 because I was motivated to prove, you know, Nick Knight, that to prove to him that I justified being in the side. You know, I was called in at the last minute the night before at Edgbaston Golf Club, because I'd scored runs in the seconds. So that motivation was, and that's what I just, you know, that's why I think the club was so strong. You know, to get into that first team, you had to score runs in the second team. There was no easy, you didn't get an easy first team cap. You know, you didn't just hand them out because, you know, people, well, we'll give you a go now as we're not sure who else to turn to. Now, the second team was run super well, and to gain a place in the first team, you had to score hundreds and lots of them and big ones. And you had to take fifers and win games. So the competition was there. And like anything, when there's competition of those sorts of players, I'm not going to argue when you reel off, you know, Nick Knight, Ian Bell, Jonathan Trott, Sam, Mark Waugh, who's a fantastic player. Now, those top four, I'm thinking, well, if I'm picking the side as captain, that's why I wasn't captain anymore, because I couldn't get in the side, because I'm not good enough to get in that side. So how did you get in that side? You go there and you score, shed loads of runs. And when, as soon as Ian Bell gets picked for England or Nick Knight gets called up to the one-day squad again, you make sure you are the first person at that door waiting to go in. And that's what the culture was. And that's you know, that's what I believe in. That's, you know, that's my philosophy. And is actually just let your bat do the talking. You know, that's what it's about. You know, you can talk in the media, you can talk in this and that. But the bottom line is, when they look at what have you done in the last month with the bat and the ball, have you scored runs? Yes, I have. Right. And I'm still not in because the side's really good, and that's fine. But you know that you're the next one in. And I think that was instilled at Warwickshire by many people. And that was what it was about. There was no, you didn't get an easy first team cap. You know, you had to earn the right to get there. And I think that's why the club is as strong as it is today and always has been, because, you know, people earn the right for that. And I think that setup, that era, I loved being part of it because of that, because it was competitive. It was really competitive, internally as well as externally.
I can imagine it was, because, again, you just look at that team, ridiculous depth of talent. I mean, we've spoken about this actually with Alan Richardson here on the podcast. So many fantastic players, and it just was a remarkable season for the Bears. And you think of all the greats who have come and gone before you of this great cricket club. I mean, we were founded in 1882, made our championship debut in 1895, I believe. Just the sixth team in Warwickshire's illustrious history to lift the county championship. It's a remarkable achievement, and again, one which no one will ever forget. I mean, not that I can say or I remember them, okay, but 1911, 1951, 1972, 94, 95, 2004, 2012, 2021. There we go. People remember them because that is your mark on this cricket club. So 2004, extraordinary in more ways than one. You just look at those stats. And yes, it wasn't exactly dominance from Warwickshire. 5 and 11. You're absolutely spot on, by the way, there, Michael, with the record. But we got the job done. And look, that's all you need. You know, across the course of a season, just outperform the others. And we did exactly that.
I think, and I'll give credit to, you know, both John and Nick, particularly with that, you know, they talked about the fact that, well, you know, even when we're up against it and we're losing the game, and I'm pretty sure the one I remember, because I was the one out in the middle, was, I'm sure that was 2004 when we played Surrey at Whitgift School and they had Harbhajan Singh playing. I'm sure going into the last day, we were already 2 or 3 down going into the final day and, you know, a million miles behind them. They were a good side. And, you know, history in those situations would suggest that basically Surrey win the game, we all go home and we're probably home by tea time or by 6 o'clock. You're already back in Birmingham. I remember because I fortunately somehow managed to get through the day betting, and we betted for 5.5-6 hours to save the game, which it only gained us an extra 4 points that day, but it stopped them getting an extra 12 or 16, I think 16 points. So it stopped them getting 12, gained us 4. So the actual difference, you know, over that was probably what, 20, it was like what they call a 6-pointer in football. So by us not losing that game, we stopped them from, you know, gaining an advantage, you know, in the championship race in that respect. And so I think Nick was very much like that. And that's what I love about declaration cricket, and we still try and play a bit of that at school to instill that bowlers, you need to learn to take wickets, not just survive and not go for runs. And batters, you need to learn, actually, I can't win this game. We're not actually going to win, but I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure we don't lose the game. So I'm going to make it really difficult for you to get me out. And that's what test cricket is. That's what four-day first-class cricket is. It is a test. It's the ultimate test of, right, you're attacking me with a ball and I'm defending and I'm not going to let you through. You know, you're trying to break into my house and I'm not going to let you through. And that's what was instilled in us by, you know, many before Nick and John, but they were just adamant. Say, look, we may struggle to bowl sides out, you know, 32 times over 16 matches, but I'll tell you what, they're not going to be able to bowl us out, and we're going to have enough runs on the board that we grind them down. So, the 5 victories we got, I can't remember them all, but I know for a fact they weren't, you know, winning by an innings and 250 runs. You know, a lot of them were hard-fought victories. So I think just that, you know, it was just a lot of things fell into place. Not many sides won many games that year, clearly. They were good pitches, and that was the thing. So your bowlers, you know, your Alan Richardsons of the world, who I absolutely loved having in my attack, because he got the ball to come into the right-hander and go across the left-hander. And so he was always hitting the stumps to the right-hander, and left-handers struggled against him because of the ball going away, because they were just conditioned to people swinging the ball back into them, trying to get them out LBW. And Alan was a fantastic exponent of that. It was just a really, you know, you look back and when you reel off those championship victory, you know, championship winning, you know, Warwickshire sides, you know, you think, well, since 94, we've won it, what, four times now, is it? So, you know, 94, 95, 2004, you know, 2012, now 2000, no, 5 times. 5 times in that what is relatively short in the history of the county championship. So I think 94 was obviously there was a lot of work done before 94 that led to that. But the, you know, Brian Lara was the catalyst to cricketers at Warwickshire believing that they could achieve much more than they ever thought they could before. And, you know, I remember Roger Tews talking about that, Andy Moles talking about that, saying, well, actually, it doesn't matter now. I believe we can achieve anything, even though there's not many people can walk out and score 501 runs on their own in one game. We know that. But actually, he gave the belief that anything is possible. And then obviously some phenomenal great minds in Bob Woolmer, Dermot Reeve, and then your Tim Muntons and your Gladstones and your Alan Donald. I mean, you just reel them off. It's incredible. So, and I think that's where I look back, and that's where I have learned, you know, in terms of how my mind works with the game of cricket. I look back at that era and think, well, I was a young, impressionable 17-year-old that learned how to run a bath and get it to the right temperature, you know, and how to make sure that the drinks were ready for the right people at the end of the day. But actually, I look back and think that's where I learned. That's where I learned all about it, because I was in the inner sanctum listening to those guys talk about it. You know, not just my own game, but actually learning from them how to play the game, you know, how to gain momentum, how to get on top of a side, how to, you know, put your foot on the throat when you've got them there, you know. And I was fortunate to learn that off the best. So I think 2004 was just that. No, it wasn't the side of 94. The 94 side was incredible. That 2004 side, you know, off the back of that 10 years later, was a side that was difficult to beat, really difficult to beat.
100%. And, you know, just listening to that, it's an incredible education in the game, isn't it? Considering that you almost went into the Warwickshire setup in a golden age of the club. Because, let's be honest, before the 1990s, we'd had various successes, but we hadn't become a real tour de force until the mid to late 90s. And all of a sudden, there was just this almost explosion of trophies at Warwickshire County Cricket Club. We had all these incredible players coming, and all of a sudden, things just started to fall into place. It must be remarkable just looking back on that. I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated by all of this, Percy, Michael. You've got some great stories.
Sorry, from when I started, so as a 13-year-old, so that was 1988. You know, and I think, you know, there was Bob Cotton, there was Andy Lloyd. You know, there was an era before Bob Woolmer came in, and then obviously before Lara. I think, you know, actually, it's unfair. You know, Lara was sort of the icing on the cake. You know, the cake was already formed. The cake, the ingredients was in there. I think what Asif Din and Dermot did the year before at Lord's, what that, you know, under the captaincy of Dermot, under the leadership of Bob Woolmer, you know, there's so much, and people, you know, I was a youngster then. I wasn't even on the staff in 93, but what they achieved that day, chasing, having conceded the highest total in at Lord's in a final for however long, if not ever, to then go and beat it in the next innings off the last ball, you know, by one run. And what they achieved, that instilled a great belief into that group, you know. And I think it was Roger Tews. I don't know the exact stats. You'll probably be able to help me. In 1993, I think Roger Tews scored less than 200 championship runs, or just over 200 championship runs, an average of, you know, ridiculous, hardly anything. And then the first game of 1994, so after that 93 final, they signed Brian Lara, the excitement around that. And actually, I think the first game, I'm pretty sure Roger Tews got a double 100. I think he got a massive double, he got a big double 100 in the first championship game of that season. And the talk was, you know, of him welcoming the second best left-hander in the world to the dressing room, you know, to Brian Lara. Dominic Osler talking about the fact that him and Roger Tews would walk out to bat, and basically they were almost willing to run each other out so that they got to bat with Brian Lara. So that was the Brian Lara effect. It wasn't just the runs he scored, which were absolutely incredible. It's the fact that everyone else wanted to bat with him. So if you're, you know, last ball of the over, you know, normal times you just think, oh, maybe I'll try and hit this here or about there. It was like, I just want a beer for the next over because I want to watch him face. So those little things become, like, it just generates this, you know, elite, you know, mindset of, right, we can be better. He's shown us we can do this. We as a group, Bob and the group and Dermot, particularly those two, had created an environment where we can achieve anything. We can learn to do things, you know. I mean, I could talk for hours and hours about sweeping the ball to spinners, about the strike rate of our spinners, or the run rate against our spinners, 1993 compared to 1994, where, you know, we drove into Edgbaston on a Saturday morning. I was, what, 18, my first year, and Dermot sat us all down. He played a video you know, a VHS tape of James Boyling bowling to Dominic and Trevor in a one-day match. And I think in the over, I think Dominic swept the first ball, just fine swept the first ball for two. Field didn't change. He fine swept the second ball for two. They moved the guy from 45 on the offside to stop that. Next ball, he went down and reverse fine swept that ball to the gap where the fielder was for two. Then I think he got a one. And then Trevor ran down the track and hit a four over mid wicket. And so they scored 11 or 12 off the over. And Dermot just said, right, that's how we are going to play against spinners. You practice and practice and practice the sweep, just like you would your forward defence. And you get men behind there because it means there's more gaps there. We will average five, five and a half, six and over against their spinners, and our spinners will go for less than four and over. And that will be the difference between us winning the one-day trophies and not winning the one-day trophies. So that was the sort of detail they did. And having grown up in a net that if you played a sweep shot, the coach would stop the net, come down and talk to you for 15 minutes of why that is not a good option because it's dangerous. So now the area you see that actually the sweep, the ramp, the reverse sweep, the reverse hit, the, you know, the Petersons, the Butler ramp, the everything. Now it's actually, you see that more than you see a forward defence, you know, it's because that's what's achieved. And I think Bob and Dermot were ahead of their time in instilling the confidence in the group that you are not going to be rollocked by the coach coming off having got out playing the sweep if we've seen you prepare it and practice it in the nets in order to deliver that, because this is what we're going to score against them and this is what they're going to score against our spinners. So that was just one example of how their minds thought, you know, how their mind worked. And that, you know, to me, that's not changed. The style of shots may have changed. And now, actually, you never see a spinner come on to bowl without a 45 that side and a 45 that side, because you just know that it's too easy for a batter to get two or three or even four runs there. So that in itself has just created more space for your orthodox, you know, textbook shots in front. And that's not changed. I mean, there's certain things have changed, nuances of the one-day game, but that's what they did in 1993, 1994. And so that created an environment where the Warwickshire batters believed that they could play a different style of game to what everyone else or what a lot of people were targeting at the time. People swept the ball. There'll be people listening to this thinking, well, my county swept the ball before that. Yes, they swept the ball, but it wasn't targeted in a way that actually it's going to become a strategy of how we are going to do it. And then once you've got the players there, you don't need to sweep it because the gap's filled. Now you've got gaps there. So we can now score off every single ball because there's only two men saving one in front of square. Whereas without those two, there used to be four men saving, so hardly any space. So that's why spinners could tie people down. So it was that. It just instilled a belief. And I don't think that belief has ever left Warwickshire because of its recent history. And I think that's why it's got that, you know, other counties will win championships and win T20s and win, you know, 50 over comps. But there's that belief that Warwickshire can achieve that. And I think that started probably late 80s, early 90s. And then obviously historically, you look at, you know, what yesteryear, you know, 100 years ago, what Warwickshire players and that have. It's just a great club. It's, you know, it's steeped in, but recent history, there's some, you know, phenomenal success and some phenomenal individuals that we've all had the pleasure to watch or, you know, in my case, the fortune to actually stand and play with.
Absolutely. I mean, as a Warwickshire fan nowadays, I couldn't have really chosen a better era to be born in. We seem to be winning trophies every two, three seasons. So
absolutely.
Obviously, I would agree with that, Michael, but just before we get onto the chat about Jacob Bethel, because I do want to touch upon that, in today's podcast, he's been absolutely outstanding in the Under-19 World Cup. If we could just talk about how it ended at Warwickshire, if you're able to, of course, because you did have a long career, Edgbaston, when you think about it, making your debut in 1996 and your final game was in 2008. That's a very good career. And of course, you're on the staff as far back as 1994. In terms of that final game for Warwickshire, what can you recall and remember from that day? What were the emotions, what were the feelings like walking onto that field for the final time as a Bear?
Right, well, I'll be brutally honest with you. I didn't realise it was my final time when I walked on that game, but I knew it wasn't far away. I think it was certainly the last game, I think, was against Leicestershire at Grace Road. and probably quite if I could have written my own script, I'd have probably hit, you know, 100 off 73 balls with a few sixes in. But actually it finished, as most people will remember my batting, with a you know, the wall going up and nothing shall pass, and I'm going to leave and block it for my dear life to save this game for the Bears. And that's pretty much how it ended. You know, lots of forward defences, back foot defences, sways out of the way. Not many runs, hardly any boundaries. And I think I got 60-odd not out, and we saved the game. And that probably was, it's probably a good way for me to finish, actually, of remembering that actually that was my style. That's what I did. You know, if you wanted me to go and smash, in red ball cricket, if you wanted me to go and smash, you know, the ball around the park like some people can do these days, then I wasn't your man. So, and it was just, you know, appraisal system had come into the game that previous few years, which was a good thing. So it got to, you know, Ashley Giles was in charge, and it got to, I think that was probably June time. So it was only halfway or just over halfway through the season. It may have been July, but I think it was June time. And that week I was sort of having my appraisal, and, you know, Ashley called me in and just said, look, you know, right, Michael, I want to let you know that we're probably not going to offer you a contract next year. And I fully understood, because my performances didn't warrant it. I wasn't as fit as what I used to be. And I, you know, that sort of drive and passion for how the game was moving just had left me and had deserted me slightly. Even though I still had the passion to stand in the middle and block the living daylights out of it. But I think the game and the fans of the Bears deserved better than that. So I was fortunate that, as it was an emotional time, and I was gutted. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I there was a lot of tears. There was a lot of sort of, right, is this really it? Do I, you know, and Ashley was good. He said, look, we'll support you in, you know, however you want to finish this year, blah, blah, blah. And I just said, look, you know, I probably need the next few days. And I think a week later, I came back in and I think I played a few second team games. And I said, look, I'm here to help the next generation, the youngsters coming through. But luckily, I'd spent a couple of winters at a school in Scotland, at Loretto School, where Sam obviously eventually came across. And the headmaster there at the time, Michael Maver, had said to me, Michael, as soon as you want to finish, we want you to come and work here, run the cricket, and we'll get you involved in the boarding houses and helping there. So it was, you know, the irony of that being that he was actually a headmaster at Rugby School previously. So, it, you know, looking back, sort of the stars were clearly aligned. John Inverity had been the same with me. Actually, when I finished the captaincy, you know, we sat together in a hotel room in Kent after that last game, when it, you know, we'd sort of decided that I wasn't going to continue as captain. And John, I mean, he was a headmaster and a university lecturer back in Western Australia, in Perth. You know, very well-respected man. He's got a stand named after him at the Wacker. You know, this guy was a very intellectual, amazing human being. And he sat me down and he said, Michael, I don't, you know, look, your career's not over. You're just finishing the captaincy. And you've got a lot of drive, a lot of resolve and drive to do well. You know, come back next year fitter and firing and get back in the side. And obviously that's the side we went on and won the championship with. But he said to me, honestly, he said, Michael, if I was still in charge of a school, I would want you working in it with me. So I'd want you to be working with our youngsters. And, you know, that was just to hear that from him, who was, you know, so well renowned in the educational world as well. And he said, look, Michael, you've got, you know, you're more interested in helping other people and the youngsters around you than you are in helping yourself, which is probably why you're in the situation you are now and not carrying on as captain. But that's a great trait to have. And he said, you know, you should seriously consider going into the, you know, into the world of education. And so it was actually that, I think that winter and the following winter, the 2004-05 winter, I actually went up to Loretto School for the first time. A good friend of mine, Dave Burton, who I'd worked with at Lawrence Sheriff School, and he said, look, we want you to come up and run our cricket and help with the rugby. And, you know, I was pretty sporty as a kid anyway, so, you know, could turn my hand to a few other sports. And that's how that link started. And, I, you know, that it worked for me in that way, hence why I'm now sat at Rugby School doing what I'm doing. But I think, you know, I was advised, again, that's something I think Warwickshire in my era and towards the end of my era did really well. And looking at, you know, I know there'll be a few that would say the opposite because their careers didn't quite end as well as they would want. But I think I was just fortunate with the people that I was surrounded with, and so I got sort of a line into working in schools, and that made a big difference.
Well, Michael, it's nice to know that. It really is the fact that the transition out of the game was relatively smooth. Obviously, in an ideal world, things would have, you know, ended differently. You would have had a nice farewell game, I suppose. But it's professional sport, isn't it? At the end of the day, the fact is you still had a lengthy career at Warwickshire County Cricket Club, lifting silverware, and something which, I'm going to be honest, has cropped up time and time again when I'm reading articles, I'm looking back on old, you know, videos and interviews, is the word selfless. You know, in terms of your playing career, it was always club first, player second, and that's something which I and a lot of Warwickshire fans have a great deal of respect for. So, in hindsight, I think you can be immensely proud of that Warwickshire career. And obviously, in the years that followed, you've helped out the club even more with the assistance of two rather prominent names here in Warwickshire in the last few seasons, one of which is Sam Hain, the man with the highest List A average of all time, 59.78. It's even higher than Virat Kohli's. He should have played for England by now, in my extraordinarily unbiased opinion. And then, of course, more recently, as we've witnessed in the Under-19 World Cup with a blistering 88 from 42 balls, a certain Jacob Bethel, who I know you've had a major role in terms of his transfer and his setup here in Shakespeare's County. In terms of those two players, what's the origin story behind your role in their moves to the Bears? We'll start with Sam Hain.
Yes, I think in both situations, you know, both amazing cricketers, you know, really exciting cricketers. And I suppose, you know, it's my link with schools as much as it is my link with the game itself. Obviously, you know, the link of the game probably comes first. But at the age of which, so Sam first came across on an exchange to Loretto School up in Scotland. It was actually through another member of staff there, Dennis Dickinson, who worked with a family that then moved back to Australia and worked at the Southport School. I think one of the parents worked at the Southport School. And so he knew the family there, and we set up an exchange. He said, I've got links with this school, the Southport School. So he spoke to them, and they came back, a good friend of his, and said, well, actually, our director of sports son is an absolutely fantastic young cricketer, British passport. He's really keen to come across. So that's how that link started. So Sam arrived first day, along with a few other boys. We had about three or four exchange students then that were just coming to, you know, have a time away. And then the school set up the opportunity. And I think in my time, six, possibly seven boys went across to Australia, one to South Africa and the other six to Australia and spent their cricket season over there. So it was a fun, you know, it was an exchange rather than just, you know, getting an import to come to your school. It was brilliant. So Sam became, you know, one of the first ones we brought across as the son of his father, Brian Hain, who was director of sport at the Southport School. And Sam arrived, you know, we'd heard he's a useful player. I picked him up at Edinburgh Airport that morning. He was absolutely shattered, obviously having come from Australia. And we had a match against, like a 40-over match that afternoon against George Watson's College. And Sam, you know, I said, look, we've got a match, obviously. And he said, oh, yeah, I'll play. So he went to bed. We got him back to the boarding house. We showed him his digs, got him in. He went and had 2 or 3 hours sleep, joined us for a bit of lunch, and then came out later that afternoon and hit, I think he hit 120-odd not out in no time at all. Did not hit one ball in the air. That was the most fascinating thing about it. Anything that was on his stumps went through wide mid-on, mid-wicket for four, and anything wide of off-stump went through the covers for four. Anything short, you didn't want to bowl short at him, it was just pulled out of the park. So he literally, you know, apart from the odd pull shot, every ball went along the floor. He just looked in complete control, and there, I can't remember the guy that was running their crease, came up to me and said, who on earth is this kid? He said, no one bats like this at this time of year in Scotland. I said, yeah, he looks all right, doesn't he? So that's how it started with Sam. So I rang within a week, I think. I rang both Dougie Brown and Ashley Giles up. I think Ashley was obviously still running the Bears then, and Dougie was part of running the academy, I think, and the youth programme. And I just said, look, I've got this kid. He's just arrived. He's only 14. He turns 15 in July. said, he's got a British passport. I have to be honest, I think you should have a look at him. So I sent him down for, I think over one of the holidays, he came down and spent a few days. We got him set up with one of the families in Birmingham. And so it was more that role. And I think my role in, and our role as a family in both the boys has been as much sort of as a guardian mentor type thing. So in Jacob's case, I mean, Jacob arrived as an 11, 12-year-old, looked around the school. There was quite a few schools after him because he'd played in a few festivals with the Franklin Stevenson Academy, played in the Taunton Festival. So yeah, it was, he you know, Sam was literally just that summer, and then he came back the following summer or two summers after as well. And so we've kept that relationship. You know, we chat occasionally, and you know, I think my daughter, who's now 11, at the time when he was there, literally just born, she's still got a cuddly toy that Sam brought across when he came across from Australia the second time. So it's really just been more from a family aspect of saying, look, you know, you're part of our school, you're part of our boarding environment. You know, we're here to look after you when you need anything, you know where we are. And obviously the link with cricket then from, you know, in both cases, I'd say from a coaching angle, we've hardly done anything from a point of coaching. A lot of mentoring, a lot of chatting. You know, these boys, you know, Jacob now, I mean, he doesn't need me to tell him how to bat. If he ever watched me bat, he'll think, what on earth are you telling, speaking to me about? You know, this guy's got a great rhythm, a precocious talent. And the thing now is really just, you know, looking after him and making sure he's in good, safe hands, both at the Bears and with a former player, Jason Ratcliffe, who's looking after him as well. And, you know, we've just put that sort of safety net around him that is, look, let Jason and us deal with all that rubbish that, you know, everyone wants a piece of, you know. You just get on with hitting the ball, bowling the ball, and enjoying staying fit and enjoying playing the game. So I think in both cases, the roles have been more from a sort of, you know, a parental style guardianship away from home, not on an official capacity, just that's what we do. You know, and as one leaves one end of the building, we seem to just someone else arrives at the other end, you know, and they come. So look, we've thoroughly enjoyed being part of those. Like I say, Sam was very much a short stint with us, but the link was then to get into the Bears. Whereas with Jacob, you know, we've played a much bigger role from a time perspective, you know, with him and the family and his sister and that, and making sure they're both well looked after. So, but yeah, look, I'm delighted they're both with the Bears. You know, long may Sam continue. And, you know, I think we've got to be careful. You know, Jacob is a precocious talent. He's a seriously good cricketer. But, you know, he's also 18 years old. You know, and there's a lot in this day and age, in this world, there's a lot that can go on for him now. And we just want him to enjoy being part of a great club and the opportunities that arise for him, you know, on the back of the World Cup. But, you know, in both cases, you know, I want them playing international cricket for as long as possible in whatever formats they want to, you know, hopefully test cricket, you know, and get out there. So, wonderful cricketers, lovely young men and wonderful cricketers.
Well, obviously, Michael, I share those sentiments about them playing international cricket. You know, every single Bears player, it's incredibly special watching one of our own really go out onto the field representing England. But with Jacob Bethel, as you've rightfully said, you know what, he's 18 years old at the moment. Just enjoy your cricket. You know, the expectations, because I did see some stuff in the written media about him saying like he was going to be better than Brian Lara or something like that. That's what one of the articles.
I think that was one comment by someone when he was 11 years old. And right. He played. And Brian Lara actually invited him across to a charity event, I think, I assume in Trinidad, where I think Brian's from originally. And he actually batted with him. So, I mean, Jacob was like knee high to a grasshopper. He must have only been about 12, 13. And he walked out to bat with him, I think, or certainly batted with him and, you know, hit a couple of shots. I mean, you know, when he first came across, if it was fully, you know, he couldn't hit it off the square. He didn't have the power to hit it off the square. But every shot he played just looked, you watched it and, you know, even a forward defence, you just thought, wow, you know, some people just bat differently. They've got a different rhythm. They've got much more time than others. You know, no one thought that when they watched me bat. But when I watch him bat, it's like, wow, you play the game at a different level. And he's going to be a marvellous player, and we know that. But he's still a young man. You know, when you do it on the, you know, and it is on the world stage, effectively. It was on Sky Sports, and he He smashed South Africa to all parts, hit 88 off 42. The difficulty for a young cricketer is, once you've done that, once you've done what Kevin Peterson does at the Oval, the expectation is that every time you walk out to the middle, everyone's thinking, ah, this is the bloke that's going to come and do this today. And as I read a recent thing from, I think, Rahul Dravid, just saying, you know, effectively saying that I scored this many runs and I scored this many, but this is how many attempts I had. So even someone at that level failed every 2 out of 3 times and succeeded 1 out of 3 times. So 33% of your time, you're achieving what you want to. And that's like one of the best, you know. So to deal with that as a human, they're human beings. You know, every time Ben Stokes walks out in the test match now, and we still, you know, I'm still looking forward to it, or was looking forward to this winter. When he walks out to bat, everyone thinks he can just repeat what he did at Headingley, you know, and that's how he can do it. I think that day he was 1 off 39 balls or whatever he was, or 3 off 60 balls. And then he goes on and smashes a 100 and wins an amazing test match. But you can't do that. In fact, that sort of innings, you probably only do 1 in 15, 1 in 20, you know, that actual level of innings. So how do you deal with that as a human being? You know, so the expectation on a youngster that he's going to go out and smash 88 every time he goes to the middle and 40 balls is just unrealistic. But we know that he can do it. I couldn't even do that once in my career. So I, you know, that's what I mean. He's at that level, that he's that player, he could repeat that. And he'll probably repeat it more times over the next 10, 15 years, let's hope so, at the highest level. But don't put the expectation on that he's going to do it every single time he walks to the middle. And I think that's the danger with the world we live in, that, you know, your best footballer in the world is going to score a hat-trick every time he dons the boots. Well, it just doesn't happen. So let's protect him. Let's enjoy watching him develop. Let's enjoy and let's him enjoy the experience playing for the Bears, making that. Now, I know he's played in a championship match, obviously, but, you know, walking out at Edgbaston, championship match, you know, and then hopefully a T20, who knows what he gets, what comes his way. But, you know, let's take our time with it, because he may have the bat swing and the beautiful rhythm of Brian Lara, but Brian Lara was quite special as well. And not many Brian Laras come about. So I think the most exciting thing about Jacob is that he does it in all three formats, in all three facets of the game. So he could win you the game with a ball, he could win you the game with a bat, and he's a fantastic young fielder as well. He could do something spectacular in the field. But to repeat that at that level all the time, let's just give him time to, you know, get in there, enjoy being part of the Bears moving forward, and, you know, whatever else comes his way, you know, which hopefully it will. But there's a lot of good young players out there, but they can't all repeat that level consistently all the time. So let's look after them and support them and you know, and enjoy the fact that when they do it, you know, that's, you know, well done to them.
Well, to be honest, Michael, I could not have articulated that any better myself. Really, really well put that, because we've seen it with Zach Crawley on the back of that 267, and all of a sudden it's, why is he not scoring hundreds every single game? And again, we do need to tame our expectations at times, and in particular when it comes to the top order. I know Jacob's more of an all-rounder for the time being, but you are going to fail a lot more times than you succeed. And that's what we as fans also need to understand. And in particular with young players, it's all about the learning opportunities. It's a curve, you know. They're not going to go from 0 to 100 in the space of 2 years. It's a learning process. It's going to take time. But again, you mentioned it with Jacob Bethel. I've heard from so many people at the club, yourself in interviews beforehand. Jake Lintott came onto the podcast in 2020, said he's the best 15-year-old cricketer he'd ever seen. Dan Mousley has said the exact same thing as well. He's clearly a very, very special talent, but we as a club need to nurture that. And I guarantee the fans will always have his back. As he'll know, as every single Warwickshire player knows, we have fierce loyalty towards our players. But Jacob Bethel, watch out for him and let's just enjoy his development. Okay. That's all I'll say as a Bears fan.
Absolutely. And, you know, I made a living out of county cricket, and I know county cricket gets a bad rap from some people on social media. But without the opportunity, how are batsmen going to learn to bat and score hundreds without that opportunity? Well, whatever stage of the season it is, when it is, we just need that opportunity for bowlers to learn to bowl long spells, 3 spells, 4 spells in a day. And for bat, you know, that's where every cricketer worth their salt has learnt that in some format that allows them that time to develop, you know. And Now, the 88 off 42 is possible against the white ball, you know, early on with where the fielders are restricted to everyone in the circle bar two people. Obviously, that's a style of cricket. But you can also score 88 off 42 when you're already on 80 in a championship match. And you know, right, and the captain, like Will did towards the end of that match, towards the end of last season, where, right, it's a championship match. But now, in order for us to set up the declaration we want, we now need to score 88 off the next 42 balls. So that can happen against Red Bull at that time when a batter is already in. Will did it himself. So county cricket and the platform will provide those opportunities. I mean, there's nowhere else it can happen. You know, whether it's county cricket, you know, 100 cricket, 20 ball cricket, you know, whatever it is, 2020 cricket, you know, it's creating opportunities for young people, young cricketers to go out and perform and learn off other people that are doing it. And I think that's where county cricket is fantastic, you know. We're not here to argue about how many counties there should be or what the future is or blah, blah, blah. But don't discount the cricket. Everyone that's made it to the top at some point, it's played a part in their role. Manus Lavascone didn't do too badly when he came and played county cricket, and he's one of the best cricketers in the world. And he probably would have been whether he played county cricket or not. But don't, you know, it's a platform that has allowed many people to come and demonstrate what they can do. Not everyone is a Ian Bell or, you know, Marcus Truscothick that can bypass it and just go straight into test cricket and be fantastic. You know, some net take longer, some take longer, and some need that platform. And that's why it's, you know, it is, you know, the fantastic game that it is.
100%, Michael. Obviously, I'm not going to disagree with that. As the host of the County Cricket Podcast, it's a fantastic circuit, gives us so many fantastic players. And yeah, long may it continue and long may it be protected. But Michael, I mean, we're almost at the end of today's podcast. I just have one quite profound question, to be honest. And that is, what does the future hold for Michael Powell? What's next for you in terms of life, in terms of cricket? What do you want to achieve in the remainder of 2022 and maybe the years beyond?
I love my role at rugby school, you know, running the cricket here, but being a housemaster now, which pretty much takes up 80% of my time. But, I love that role. We've got two youngish kids, and an 11 and a 6-year-old. So, you know, we're sort of entrenched in the school. It's a great environment to be involved in. I'm delighted it's part, you know, it's postcode is in Warwickshire, so that I feel at home in that respect. You know, who knows, in a few years to come, I enjoy working with, you know, young cricketers, and whether that's someone starting off a game that hasn't played before or someone that's, you know, catapulting on to play in a World Cup under 19s and go on and be a professional cricketer. So I think my strength is at that, you know, that sort of age range of, you know, youngsters that are learning about the game, that you can give as much, you know, mentoring and advice and experience to. So I really enjoy that, and I like being associated with a club, you know, in whatever form. Ideally it's sort of coaching and just supporting young players through, or, you know, who knows, in years to come, maybe I'll try and venture back into that world. But right now, I'm happy preparing people for it, to be honest. And I really enjoy that, because I think that's a vital role. I think there's some fantastic, once they're in that world, there's some fantastic people and fantastic players for them to learn off anyway. And I think the more people with valuable experience that can work with sort of, you know, 10 to 18 year olds that are in the formative, you know, their formative years, in their impressionable years, that, you know, that's where I feel I can make the biggest difference and support people through. Not everyone ends up like a Sam or Jacob. There's lots of cricketers that I've worked with that just love playing club cricket, you know, and, you know, that Saturday is the best part of their week, you know, and they turn up the following Saturday, even though they got out first ball and got smashed all over the park, because they just love the game. So that's, you know, I think there's enough people qualified to work at the top level. But it's getting those down at the junior level. There's a lot of hard work that goes unpraised and unnoticed by a lot of people, and I really enjoy being part of that, you know, that pathway. We're really fortunate at Warwickshire. Paul Greatham does a superb job with the youth program there, and the academy and the EPP and all the pathway players, that the opportunity they get, and it's a great club to be a part of, you know. Obviously, only a few get to make it at the other end, but there's quite a few gone and will play for other counties or travel the world and play a variety of different cricket that, you know, that have stemmed from Warwickshire. that's why I'm proud to be part of the club, you know, even in a subsidiary way outside of it now. But yeah, I owe the club a lot, so I'm more than happy to keep supporting young players to come their way.
Well, Michael, that is fantastic here. It really is. And long may that association, that partnership between yourself and the club continue, right, for many, many more years to come. And obviously, myself and everyone here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you all the best of luck in your future endeavours. Would be lovely if you could come back to Warwickshire in some capacity in the future. I know you'd be welcomed with open arms by everyone at the club. So we'll have to wait and see. But for the time being at rugby, wishing you all the very, very best of luck, mate. But that is basically it from us two here at the podcast for the time being. Michael, just before we say our final goodbyes for the show, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, not for me. Not at all. Just the Bears. Keep supporting the Bears and obviously the county game in itself. And hopefully it's a great season. It's been a two years we never thought we'd experience in our lifetime, this last 2 years. So just, you know, boys and girls out there playing cricket and striving to wear that Bears shirt in our case. So just keep enjoying it, and let's hope it's a great summer ahead. Whatever's happening at the top with England, there's plenty of good young players, boys and girls, that are going to be striving to turn that around in the next few Ashes series and beyond.
There most certainly are. And yes, I echo those words. Absolutely. Support your county. That's all I'll say. And if it's Warwickshire, even better. Right, because obviously as the resident Warwickshire fan, I'm going to say that. But Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure. All that I've got to say is one final thank you. Thank you very much for taking the time. I understand you are a busy man. I've taken up almost an hour and 40 minutes of your time, so apologies about that. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure, and you're always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. But that is basically it from us two here at TCCP for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.